Warning, this podcast has stories of real-life events and true crime that happens every day. These stories may contain adult language and graphic or disturbing details not suitable for everyone. Listener discretion is advised. In our society, most people are content to go through their daily lives safely and peacefully. But our society is not always safe or peaceful. For that reason, some men and women answer a higher calling to defend and protect their fellow man. You probably know someone who is one of these people, or maybe you are one of these people. The ones who see and do the things most people would never want to. These things are sometimes heroic and beautiful, but often they are horrific and terrifying. It's these things they don't share about with other people. It's these things they carry with them, so you don't have to. But when they get together, they talk to each other about them. And they call these stories war stories. Welcome to another episode of the War Stories Podcast. I'm Tom.
And I'm John.
And we are back on this Thursday edition. Sorry about the Thursdays. It's just between rioting and John getting his shift changed. Your deployment periods are every 3 months?
It goes, I don't know, something like 3, 3, 4. I don't know. It's whack. If you guys have an issue with it, talk to my command staff.
And usually we plan around it to yeah. Try and have episodes recorded prior to, so we don't skip a day, but because of the riots and then shift change happening during all that, we didn't. So
yeah, everything's kind of getting back to normal. So they're trying to catch up with times.
I mean, hell, people still are barely being approved for vacation
that's true.
You know, a lot of agencies go. So, all right. So we are here with Matt. What's up, Matt?
Hi, Matt.
Hey, guys.
You guys remember Matt? Matt was the first one to talk about his experience on a Navy flight deck watching somebody turn the wrong zig when they should have zagged.
Yeah, vaporized.
Yep. Meat sauce.
And then he was also the one who talked about getting out of the Navy and things going a little haywire.
Yeah, being a guest of the state of Arizona for a couple of years.
Yeah, exactly. But we're waiting on, and we should be letting them in right now. Larry and Terry from Hollywood Weapons agreed to follow up with us and do another episode.
Yeah, what's up, guys? Nice to I appreciate you having us on, man.
Season 4, right?
Season 4.
Yeah, finally. We actually filmed this damn thing. It was in the can, Larry, what, June? Like a year ago we finished.
A year ago, yeah. Oh, wow.
And then it was supposed to be on in the fall, and then they put it back to like January, and then they're like, we need a strong opener for third quarter, so now it's in July. So I was laughing the other day.
Oh, and then a world pandemic hit.
Yeah, that too.
Yeah, that thing.
Yeah, I mean, whatever. Yeah, so it's – it's good that it's finally coming on, I guess.
Well, last time we had you guys on, Terry and Larry met my co-host who was sitting in. You guys know Salty Elliot. Over there is John. You guys did not get to meet John last time. He was working.
Oh, nice to meet you. Nice and to then, meet you, man.
Larry, I think you know the guy in the middle. This is Matt. Matt and Larry and I.
I don't know that I'm going to lay claim to that, but yes, I recognized him when the screen came on.
Oh, and Terry, this is our good buddy Matt who's joining us for today.
Nice to meet you, bud.
Hey, nice to meet you too, Terry.
I'm so glad you guys are here. You guys just did a thing, I guess. You're on the social media tour right now. We're part of that. Is that what I'm understanding?
Well, we just did a interview earlier this morning with Dan. Stuff that he's going to be posting on the Hollywood Weapons website. So pretty much the same thing we'll be doing today, I guess, with you guys.
Right. Well, I appreciate you guys coming back. So last time you guys, I know we had to cut some words out that Terry may have let slip. So let's talk about,
be careful.
Let's
I'll
talk about season 4. And I always remember I have the almighty edit button. So you guys
I figured I'd curse in the beginning to just establish my my bona fides, and as soon as we record, I'll be back to being, you know, TV guy.
Well, I mean, it's a podcast, so you can curse. It's just, you know, make sure your mom doesn't listen.
Yeah.
Season 4 was actually supposed to be, we were getting a bump to 14 episodes, but we had to edit out so much of what Terry said by mistake that it's still only eight.
Six episodes.
Yeah, but what you what you have is gold, and that's what.
Yes, hands down. There's no doubt about that.
Oh, that's funny.
Wow. So what have you guys done so far? Now that you've got, we had the season three, we interviewed you prior to that. And, I think the thing that we couldn't talk about was Indiana Shepherd. Is that what we couldn't talk about?
We could talk about it. I mean, that's the opener to the season opener. I think it's in July 8th. And then, it was a lot of, I mean, look, dude, I've Indiana Jones. I mean, you guys maybe don't know this, but before I enlisted in the Army, I got my degree in anthropology and archaeology. So I was like, that's kind of my realm anyway. And then it's just such a great character. You know, I love the pulp. It's kind of like a pulp story from the 30s, really, is what he is. And so to get a chance to be him, and, you know, we put in some scenes there that you're going to, I think one of the best things about Hollywood Weapons is we get to do stuff where if you know that movie or you know the TV show, we'll hit some scenes, some quotes or something, you're like, ah, I remember that. So we got a couple of those, I think, little gems in there. And the tests were great. We got to go down to this place, Uvalde, Texas, a place called Drive Tanks, where we had carte blanche down there. The dude's got a – Spencer has a – I think the only World War II Sherman tank that drives and fires. So we got to use that.
That does not suck.
No, it was cool. I got to drive it, and Larry has done some stuff in the military with armor. So putting him back in the turret, I felt like he was back in the saddle again, right, bud?
It was a great place, and it's not only an experience where you can go and just drive tanks. You can also shoot a flamethrower, which maybe we did.
I'm sorry,
I don't know.
Where is this place?
You could pull the lanyard on some pieces of artillery, which. Maybe we did. I don't know.
I think I know a guy who's always wanted to pull the cord on a piece of heavy artillery. I think I know a guy. He's maybe sitting two seats over from me, but I'm pretty sure I know a guy that's always wanted to do that.
Yeah, you know
it's basically a playground for knuckleheads like us.
Yeah. It's also in the realm of a kind of a living history museum. Where they put a lot of effort into restoration and preservation of real, historical pieces. So the work they're doing down there is really, really great. If you ever get a chance to visit, you should.
Yeah, it's a really cool spot.
You just go there and pay for all this?
Yeah, and you know what? It's the most amazing thing. It's literally in the middle of nowhere. And you get to a kind of a gate in the middle of nowhere, and you got to punch in your code. And once you're on the other side of the gate, they've got like 5-star hotel bungalows that you stay in. It's actually in the middle of a hunting preserve. You can hunt all African animals there except for the big cats. So if you want to go on a safari, but you don't want to have to go all the way to Africa, you can go and do it there. It's just this. It's this adult playground. It's really cool.
Interesting.
And you're driving around, and you're going to the range, and all of a sudden you're just getting mobbed by like emus and ostriches.
Yeah.
Are ostriches like, really as mean as they say?
Actually, the ones there I think are I think one of them was sketchy, but one of them was really friendly because again, some of them were raised as chicks, and so they just came right up to you. I mean, I wouldn't put my face in front of them, but. Man, they get like they're just like this at the looking at you, and they were really. It was just like it's a really cool place, and everybody who works there is really nice, and they were very very accommodating what we wanted to do for the show, because obviously we tested stuff from The Last Crusade, and if you know that movie, that there's not a Sherman tank in that. It's actually a Mark 8, I think, which is from World War I, and so. We didn't have that, but the gun was awfully similar, and it was good enough for what we did. That was a really good spot, man. It's Texas. What do you want?
Free America, right?
No, that's true.
Yeah.
Give them a plug. What's it called? Give them a plug.
DriveTanks.com.
Oh, well, that's easy to remember.
All right.
Yeah.
DriveTanks.com. Well, because Drive Tanks, blow shit up, stay in a 5-star bungalow, and play with a flamethrower is way too long of a .com.
They have all sorts of functioning. They have all sorts of functioning weapons and guns, and I think Larry, I got the idea that if you kind of tell them what you want to do, and they kind of work it out for you, right? I mean, if that there's all sorts of different weapons and stuff like there are.
It's one of those places where it's you build your own experience. You can do just about whatever you want. Driving tanks. They have armored vehicles. Some APCs. They actually just got a T-72 tank that they've refurbished. That they've got in there. Some very rare pieces. Lots of small arms. We actually do on the opening episode. We're going to do a little walkthrough of their little museum there, so you'll get a feel for what can be done.
It's living cool history place. And killing history in the same place.
Yeah, man, guns and blowing stuff up and emus.
They just need to relocate to the autonomous zone,
and right?
We'll be good.
Take everything to Chaz.
Yeah, you know, it was funny. me and Terry, we met at the airport and we shared a rental car when we were driving down there. And he was like, "Well, we'll probably just stop and get something to eat before we hit town." And within about 15 minutes, it's like, I don't know when the next town is going to show up. And what was it, Terry? It was about a 3-hour drive.
Wow. Yeah,
it was. And when you get there, it's the middle of nowhere. There's no town to go to. But luckily, like I said, they have a kind of a 5-star accommodation there. They had a kitchen. They did, you know, snacks and microwaves in the rooms and stuff like that. So it was pretty cool.
3 hours of nowhere, though.
Yeah. It's southwest of Albuquerque, I think is where it was, Terry.
We actually flew into San Antonio.
That's what it was.
And I've been down there. I was actually part of the Q course when I went through the Special Forces medical course. It used to be at San Antonio. Now it's all at Bragg. But yeah, so it's like it's kind of that Texas Hill country. And, you know, within there's a couple spots, but I was thinking, let's just get a little bit closer. But as we got further away from San Antonio and closer to Uvalde, there was really nothing there. So we got we showed up there pretty darn hungry.
Yeah.
But it was cool, man. Go there if you get a chance. You won't be disappointed.
Well, I was telling John I smell maybe a listener trip where we organize a bunch of our listeners that want to go out and do a meetup and play with tanks. That's a –
They'll take good care of you.
Good care of you. Yeah.
Oh, I'm gonna have to give him a shout out. I should probably say Larry sent me and not Terry sent me, right?
Yeah, I would never drop my name if you want a positive result.
So now I wanted to kind of for the listeners that maybe have not gone back and listened to the previous episode, we had you guys on before. And you guys both, that it's not really talked about in the show as much, yours Terry is, but not Larry, you both have a deep, deep background in the military. You're both veterans. You both served. If you could just tell me both quickly so our listeners can kind of catch up on what your background is. Terry, you go first.
Yeah, so I was, I was in college at University of North Carolina at Wilmington, and like I said, I had switched my major from bio to anthropology, and it was right before my senior year, and I accidentally read a book about, you know, Mac V. Sog in Vietnam, and I remember reading it cover to cover, and what impressed me wasn't the missions, which were harrowing. I mean, those are my favorite guys in our community, but it was the pictures, a black and white picture of these cats coming out of the bush, tiger stripe fatigues. Sweaty, dirty, arms around each other, black dudes, white guys, Montagnards, and they were smiling. And some of those people never came back from that mission, and these dudes were still smiling. So I thought, I want to be that kind of guy that comes back from death and can smile. So like when I graduated, I enlisted in the Army. I was an 82nd infantry guy. Great place to grow up in the Army. I went to Ranger School. I went to Jungle School in Panama. I was in the Gulf War for 8 months, Recondo School, and then I went to Special Forces Selection. I passed that, and then I wanted to be an 18 Delta. I wanted to be a medic because I had a science background. And after I read what those cats did in Vietnam, that was the job I wanted. And so I graduated that course. I was in 10th Special Forces Group in Germany, Charlie 1st Battalion 10th in Stuttgart. So ich war in Stuttgart für viel hab Jahre, meine Freundin. And then I graduated June of 97. I ETS'd. I got out of the Army in June of 97. So I've been in for close to 9 years. Went back to New York City, auditioned for classical theater school. I got in the Circle in the Square, which is a, you know, full-time professional, you know, Broadway stage academy. So that was a 2-year full-time program. And then I was in the city working, living as a professional actor. And then 9/11 happened. And I thought, what do I do? Do I go on auditions or get back in the fight? So I actually looked into it and I re-enlisted. I'd been out for 4.5 years at this time. I went to the Special Forces National Guard out of Rhode Island because that was like 3.5 hours from where I lived in Manhattan. So October of 2001 to October of 2016, that was my unit. We deployed a lot. combat tours, JSATs, where we go and train foreign militaries, training school at a lot of schools. It wasn't a normal National Guard job. It was really busy. But the whole time I'm doing this, I'm still doing theater in Manhattan. And then I got my first big gig. I hosted a show called History on History Channel. It's called Warriors with Terry Shepard. That was my first big series. And then I did Shark Week and a survival show on Dude, You're Screwed.
I remember Dude, You're Screwed. And I first remember seeing you on Shark Week. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then the whole time I'm doing all this shenanigans, I'm still training and deploying as a special forces guy. And the last 5 years I was in, I was a team sergeant. So I was a senior ranking enlisted guy on an A team. And then, like I said, I retired in 2016. And this is our fourth season of Hollywood Weapons.
I think that takes us to now, yeah?
Yeah, and I'm a scuba instructor for a military charity. And I hang out with old dogs and I live at the beach. That's me.
So you can't complain.
If I complain, I need to get an ass whipping because I've been really lucky and fortunate, and I can't complain. We all still do, as Joe Walsh says. I can't complain, but sometimes I still do. But when I do, I go, ah.
Yeah, but
I'm still alive. You know, we got friends who never came back.
So yeah, we complain to each other, and it's all in perspective.
Yeah, yeah. If it gets too much, the guy will go, dude, shut up. You're not taking a dirt nap.
Right. Now, Larry, you have also got the military experience, but you didn't have to deploy. You joined the military right where the action is.
Yeah. Well, first, I want to be clear. When Terry says that he hangs out with old dogs, he wasn't referring to me. Okay. He rescues dogs.
That's debatable.
So he has elderly canines is right. What he hangs out with. So
that's
just
true.
Want to make sure we're clear on that. But yeah, call it where the action is, if you will. I was born here in Philadelphia, but when I was very young, like 4.5 years old, my family moved to Israel, and I grew up there, went through all my schooling there. And of course, when you're a citizen there, when you turn 18, you go into the military. So I happened to go in during the 1980s, which is a time that back then was called Operation Peace for Galilee. Now it's referred to as the First Lebanon War. So, you know, the whole Marine Corps barracks being blown up, all those other things that happened, we were kind of there in the thick of it.
Yeah. And you did how long? And then, because it's a minimum 2 year commitment, but
So they, you know, the small print, that minimum commitment changes depending upon whether there's a war on or not.
Okay.
So it was supposed to be 3 years. It wound up being closer to 4.5 because of the job that I was doing and what was going on at the time caused me to stay a little bit longer than normal.
Yeah. And you
I would
guys,
have done it anyway. It wasn't a matter of being forced to do it. But you know.
I'll tell you what. You see the picture of Terry in his Army greens with his beret on. You see that it's Terry, but if you share the picture of Larry when he was in the IDF, for those of you that do watch the show and then see it, you'll have to look pretty close to recognize him. You got your sunglasses on, you got a sleeveless shirt on.
Well, you know, that's what, you know, civil wars and conflicts in Lebanon do that to you. It changes you, man. So
that's
not the same Larry that you know now.
That picture that you're talking about, man, I mean, Zanoff literally looks like he's on the cover of Soldier of Fortune back in like 1980.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, it looks like, you know, you couldn't
it's
make
perfect.
That up.
It's a perfect picture. It's perfect. It's such a
that,
perfect
that picture, me and my team, we were about 6 weeks away from our closest shower when that picture was taken. We were out. That was right at the beginning of the conflict. We'd been out in the field for I don't know how long. And one of my guys just took that snapshot. But
what's the gun you got there?
If you see that photo, what's that?
What's the gun you got there?
That is here in the States. They call it a Galil SAR, which differentiates it from the Galil ARM, which was the one with the wood hand grip and the folding bipod and the full length barrel. In the IDF, it was called a Glilon. So you have a Galil. If in Hebrew, if you add on onto the end, it means little one. So that was the little Galil. It didn't have the bipod, didn't have the wooden grip. You couldn't shoot rifle grenades off of it. And again, this was like 82, 83. This was long before the Micro Galil was ever developed. But the kind of rank and file were getting the full-length Galil at the time, and the SF troops were getting the shortened version of it, you know. All except for one of my teammates who got the full-length one so we could still shoot rifle grenades off of it.
Well, yeah, you got to have grenades.
Of course, he was very upset about that, but oh well.
So in keeping with the spirit of Hollywood Weapons, it's such a fun show, and you guys have such a fun relationship, and you do such fun things. I wanted to bring you both on to tell maybe something that you remember anecdotally from your time in the service that just, you know, we all have these weird memories. We all have these things where it was just a blast and you could never replicate it. You just take a snapshot in your mind and you look back on it the rest of your life from your time in the service, and that, you know, you got 5 or 6 or 10 or 12 or however many, depending on how long you were in. And these moments, like, those are the ones where you, when you talk about missing it, that's the camaraderie and the fun and all that stuff that, that we miss. But before you guys tell us that stuff, I wanted to ask real quick, what, if you can tell us up to date now that, you know, season 4 is about to drop, can you talk about what your favorite test was?
In season 4?
Of any of them.
Because
I don't want you to give anything away from season 4 if you can't. But if you can, great.
Yeah, and I hate to do the turf the question off. I mean, actually, there were so many good ones over these last 4 seasons. We were talking today about what my favorite episode was in general. Really, it kind of comes and goes. I'm like in a different camp. I think one of my favorite episodes that I did was The Shadow. It was in season 3. It was because it was the whole thing. We had Molly, our makeup gal, did the – have you ever seen the movie
version
with –
Yeah, he's got the prosthetic.
Yeah, because, you know, and I read those books. I'm a huge pulp novel fan from the 30s. So I have all the reprints of The Shadow. I have, like, so many reprints of these stories. And, you know, he had that hawk nose and those kind of eyebrows. Molly created that perfectly, like we saw in the movie. And then I had the slouch hat, this cape. The glove, I mean, like, literally I felt, and then I'm walking through the Burbank City Hall, which is an Art Deco building, and the way it was lit and the cape is swirling around me, and I have this hat on pulled down low, and I thought, holy, and I'm in the back of an old cab telling the guy to drive. I thought, dude, I'm the Shadow today. And then on that one, we recreated in the movie the scene where they literally collide 2 bullets in midair, and we were successful. So it was like,
yeah,
that might
cool.
be one of my favorite episodes, you know? But I also like, you know, and this one, like I said, I got to play in season 4. You'll get to see me as Indiana Jones. I get to play Mr. O'Rourke from Fantasy Island. Yes.
I can't wait to know what you tested from Fantasy Island.
You'll see.
You'll be surprised.
You'll be surprised. Okay. You'll be surprised. Then also I got to be Marlon Brando. I worked really hard on my Godfather impression. You won't even recognize me when you see it.
Wait a minute. Larry, were you tattooed? Please tell me you were tattooed.
No, it was Pompeo was tattooed.
I will not tell you that I was tattooed.
Damn it.
Yeah, so they're all, I mean, in different ways, man, they're all cool. I mean, when I got to shoot the Sharps rifle from the Quigley Down Under episode, that really, really 800, like 20-yard shot, and Tom Selleck came on and talked to me. I mean, we've had so much fun, dude. It really is hard to say which one is my favorite. Different times, or it depends. I mean, I dig pretty much all. And as I've said before, yeah, I'm a special forces guy. Really, all I care about, guys, is playing dress up. I mean, I'm just being honest. I mean, I just like dressing up like – I mean, I got to dress up like a female vampire from Underworld. So who's better than that? I win, even if the test isn't successful. You
know? So, Larry –
Guns are boring. Dressing up, that's critical. That's critical.
I guess, Larry, maybe I shouldn't ask you which one you liked the most – which one were you most apprehensive about? Because you're the safety
clearly
guy.
As far as apprehension, Terry dressed up as a female vampire. I mean, that's got to be the most concerning episode. But yeah, you know, because when I do this stuff, I'm doing some on-camera work, but I also do all the behind-the-camera prep. I do all the kind of safety aspects of the show. So my favorite episode favorite test as far as getting through it is every single test we do successfully and no one got hurt. So it's whatever the last test was. But There's a few standouts. I mean, the hitting the two bullets in midair like that, that was a challenge that, you know, we almost didn't do that test because it had been requested several times and the production company kept saying, well, yeah, we're not even going to look at that because there's no way we can do that really well. And we figured out a way to do it, you know, and we were successful. But another standout one was the one from the pilot shooting three different guns underwater at a windshield. It was a reproduction of a Criminal Minds episode that we did. And I mean, you know, Terry will talk to you about one episode where he was on a crane parachuting down, as it were, with a Thompson shooting. It's like, yeah, okay, a lot of people have done that. And there's a couple other things that you go, yeah, okay, a lot of people have done that. But how many people have really shot firearms underwater?
Not me.
And seen what the results are? I mean, there's been some kind of things that people were forced into, but we had the ability to do it very scientifically. And to me, I think that was one of the standout tests as well.
As
far as being apprehensive about which one, all of them.
I remember specifically the underwater one. I watched when you fired that hand cannon. You did not look like you had a good time, Terry. When you came out of the water, the look on your face said, I don't ever want to do that again.
He was like a porpoise coming right up out of the water.
And I knew it. You see, the thing is, too, I knew that was going to happen. I mean, I've done a lot of I've done a lot of interior breaching, and I know what happens with overpressure and shock. And, you know, we're in a closed container. Fluid, as you guys know, propagates waves very well, right?
Oh, yeah.
And so that's why when you're underwater diving and you hear a boat, you can't even tell where it's coming from because it's hitting you so fast from all directions. So waves are propagated very well through water. And then we're in a close. So I knew it was going to, you know, from the gun, it's going to go out and out and out and out and out. And I knew I was going to get thumped. And yeah, the only thing I could really do, I think, to mitigate it was I kept my mouth open, which they do when you're pulling an interior breech, right, guys? You know what I mean?
Right.
You just keep your mouth open so that when you get blown up, it just, you know, you're not getting an overpressure injury. But it was bad. It was so bad, dude. It was like, I've had enough of that.
Yeah.
But it was cool.
Yeah.
I got to shoot up. It was a 454 Casull. I was like, and that's the only round that actually, if you remember in the video, it just went right through the windshield. Mm-hmm. Went right through it.
Yeah, it'll go through anything.
Yeah, it's a bear gun.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean,
you know, I had a question because that brought back a memory of me watching the episode. I think, was it a Clint Eastwood movie where the single shot on the noose?
Yeah, that's the good, the bad, and the ugly one, right?
How many times did that really take?
Well, you see it in the show. I didn't hit it the first time. The first time I shot it, I went right by it and I didn't change anything. I thought, wow, that's just me. You know, I mean, that's just maybe a little bit of a pull or something like that. I think I hit it, Larry, I think that first time from the platform, I think I hit it the second time maybe. Is that right? I'm trying to remember.
The one from the platform with the lever action gun was on the second shot.
Right.
In reality, it got better than that because we'll give you a little bit of Hollywood Weapons trivia. He hit the rope at one point and someone forgot to have the camera rolling.
Yep.
When that happened. So after a brief discussion with the director of photography, which would have had to have gotten beeped out here, by the way, we went ahead and we did it again and he managed to hit it again. So it was actually the one from the platform was actually the second and third shot. The one from the horse with the sharps, I think, was probably about the fourth shot.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. And then the final one, it was like 200 something yards away. I never hit it. I was close. I think I got like 3 inches.
Yeah. That's the one. I mean, that was the closest nick. We nicked it at one point. And that was like on the fourth shot.
Okay. Yeah. You know, the reason I asked that question is because I do remember watching that. And I just remember a sense of frustration at some point in that show. And I'm assuming it was probably at the end when it was just a far shot and it is what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. We don't. And the thing is, too, with the show, we don't fake it. I mean, because there's guys a lot, dude. I mean, yeah, I was an SF guy, but there's guys 500 times better shooters than I am. And then you guys know too, on any given day, you have a really good day or you can have a crap day. And so most of the time, even if I don't make it, I mean, I'll make a joke and say, well, I couldn't make it, but, you know, Clint Eastwood definitely could.
Right.
So, I mean, like, yeah, if the best thing, too, is to not to fake it, because then it just it takes it away. And, you know, the thing is, too, with the movies and all that, I've said this in an interview. Our goal is, people have asked me, so are you like debunking movies? I go, no. Our goal is not to debunk anything. Our goal is to celebrate it, right? Just to have fun, because it's not like, oh, you know, that shot in Die Hard was BS. I mean, that's not what we want to do. We want to see, can it be done by, you know, knucklehead Terry? And, you know, and that's kind of the way it is. I don't want to debunk anything. That's not the point. I just want to have fun, try it and see if it works, you know, and you just don't fake it.
Yeah. Debunking something or showing that it isn't necessarily possible in real life doesn't ruin my enjoyment of a movie. That's not why I go to a movie. So I loved the Die Hard episode that you were able to confirm some of those things.
Right.
Because I come to all movies, you know, most cops, most veterans, most firefighters, you go to a cop movie, a veteran movie, whatever, you're going to assume that there are going to be factual, tactical, ballistic errors because Hollywood is
100%,
Hollywood.
100%. So, 100%. If you spent all your time getting mad about, like, oh, that's bullshit, you know, there's no way they do that, then you're not going to have fun with the movie. I mean, the whole point of the gunfight or a fight, you learn this when you're doing this, the whole point of the violence scene is to further the story. So, I mean, if that helps. Now, I don't like seeing egregious things, right? Like, I think, like, you're like, come on, man. No, you can't do that. And I think in general, Larry and I have talked about this. I think in general, over the years, a lot of the tactical stuff has gotten a lot better, because I think a lot of these companies and production companies realize they have, like, guys like me, they have guys like you. There's people, and there's, of course, like Larry's out there. So I think the level of tactical advising and stuff like that's gotten a lot better. Where the old days in the 70s, everybody looked like they were Charlie's Angels, you know, and doing silly stuff with guns. I think if I see that now, and sometimes I do, I just think to myself, that's a lazy production team, because you could have gotten someone to easily vet that and go, yeah, that's not really the way you do it. It doesn't have to be exact.
Well, I can tell you. Like, We've had one of our clients that Larry and I both work with on, and he's a prop master, and he's done all these movies with guns. And John, you remember sitting down with him, and we sat with JR, and it's one of our premium episodes. But he explained, you know, a lot of those times, if you see it and it's wrong, you don't necessarily blame the actor blame the actor. Don't blame the prop guy or the technical advisor, because usually they give the director and the actor the right information. And either the actor doesn't want to do it that way. He was talking about, you know, actors going, I don't care if it's right. It's uncomfortable. I don't like it. It doesn't look cool. Oh. Or, you know, the rule of cool where the director goes, yeah, I don't care if it's realistic. That's not the way I want it to look. And so they make it look a different way.
Yeah,
so,
I mean, the guiding light here is it's a movie.
Right.
Mm-hmm. We all know it's not real.
Right.
Well, some of us know that it's not real. But, you know, the majority of us know that it's not real. And so sometimes you have to further the story point with something that may not be 100% realistic. And let's face it, 90% of the people in the movie theater, they're never going to know.
Yeah.
It's people like us that sit there and watch it. They go, oh, wait a minute, that's the wrong car for that period. That's the wrong gun for that period. And it kind of ruins the illusion of the movie. But the majority of the people don't really know. I think there's one thing that I want to add, though, to what Terry said about the technical advising. It does seem to go in cycles. And if you go back and you look at, like, Battleground, which I think was like a 1949 movie about Battle of the Bulge and how accurate it was. It's a much older movie, but guys are setting up 30 cals and ditches and everything. You're like, wow, that looks really real. Well, that's because it was 1949 and those guys had been in the military during World War II, and they still knew, they were just doing what they did for real. Currently, because of the current conflicts that we're in all around the world, we have the same kind of situation. People coming out of the military with experience and everything, and some of them find their ways into the movie industry. And so you do get a little bit of a rough curve there of, you know, sometimes some of these movies are all grouped together and they're better, and a couple of years later, they're not quite as good. It's just one of those things that we live with in Hollywood.
Yeah. I think it also depends. I also think it depends on the movie. Like for like a Black Hawk Down type movie, Those guys came to brag. They trained at Range 37, which is where I went to the Special Forces Sniper School and the Assaulter course called Safartec. So those guys were trained. So if you're going to have a movie like something that was very specific and a real, like a real snapshot of a battle or what happened, you want to get that right. But if it's sort of a comic booky kind of movie or a fantasy kind of thing where, Rambo's Rambo, or if it's like a super, or the Punisher or something like that.
Yeah. John Wick doesn't have to be accurate.
Right. Yeah. And some of that gun stuff is quite good too. When I saw the first one, I go, wow, Keanu Reeves has clearly been training jiu-jitsu, right? He's doing some pretty good gun handling stuff. But I guess it also, like, you know, that's a fantasy movie, right? It's a cool, it is what it is. If you're going to do something that's, hey, this is a reenactment of a battle, or this is what those cats did in Mogadishu, that you want to get that realistic. You don't want that to be comic booky or Charlie's Angel. But some of the other stuff, like, I don't really get mad when I see it not accurate, if it's not stupid.
Well, Terry, we only got you for a little bit more, so I wanted to see if you could tell us something about your time in the service that maybe you remember fondly. That's when our guys are out there listening, and they're always like, oh, man, I always hear these terrible stories, or I hear these combat stories, and man, it reminds me, you know, and it makes me feel like I'm not alone. But it's not all doom and gloom. We have the best
time. It's anything, dude. It is anything but doom and gloom. I think what I missed the most is, because I was a team sergeant, I missed those guys are my family. And when you become a leader, you also realize they don't work for you. I work for them. So my job in my team was always to find the right guy for the right thing, and to protect everybody from outside forces. All I asked the guys on the team, I said, dude, if you step on your crank or something, you got to tell me, right? You got to be honest with me, because
yeah,
then
me
I can protect
up.
You. So here's a funny story. This is a true story. This really happened. So I took my team. This is a couple years before I retired. We did what's called a JSET, which is called the Joint Combined Exercise for Training. SF guys, Special Forces guys, we do this a lot. We'll go and train a foreign force, like maybe they're special ops guys or their police force, or in this case, we were going to Bangladesh to teach the border guards, the BGB, and kind of reestablish contact with the U.S. Army and Special Operations President. We had to fly into Bangladesh. I had done a recon there, right? I'd done a recon with a couple guys. We did what's, you know, like sort of laying the groundwork. But then we came in with the team like a month or two later. We were way down in the middle of nowhere. We flew into Dhaka. We had to go down to Chittagong, which is on the east side of the water, on the water. And then we had to head basically east into, like, we were basically on the border of Burma or Myanmar. So we're at this place, we're at this border guard, you know, complex. And we come into the meeting room, and it's me, my team leader, my captain, my warrant officer. I think I had a couple of my Bravos there too, some guy. So we had a leaders meeting with us and their guys. I'd met some of them already, but we're sitting in like a day room, and I'm sitting there talking to the guys, talking to me, the Bengali guys talking to me. And I look up, and there's a TV on the screen, and it was on like Sky News or something. All of a sudden I look up, and it's on Discovery Channel, and there's me from Dude, You're Screwed, dubbed in Bengali. I'm not making – so check this out. Yeah, it's right. So I look up and I go – I'm not making this up, dude.
Your cover's
blown. And so I'm talking to the leader, and I look up at the screen and I go like this. And then I start looking at the dude. And then they all kind of look up at the screen, and they see me on Discovery Channel, blah, 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 blah. And they look up and they go
– yeah, that's your oh shit face.
Yeah, and they look at me and they're like – I go, yeah, it's another job I had a few years ago. I was like, what's the odds? By the way, it's pouring rain now. We got a middle of a storm coming. So what's the odds of going to Bangladesh, meeting those leaders at that time and with that TV on, and then Discovery Channel over there is playing my show dubbed with me?
It's a small world.
Come on, dude. I was like, it was hysterical, man. I was famous in Bangladesh.
Well, there's no part about, we always say that, you know, when you're in public safety or you're in the military, that we use our annual allotment of the phrase, you can't make this shit up, in about a week. So.
That's how you know you made it. That's Bangladesh.
Right. Hey, Larry, how about you?
Oh, well, that's a hard story to top right there, but... yeah, I mean, if you think of, you know, something that you just can't make this kind of stuff up, right? We were there. There's two things actually that stick in my mind. We were on a mountaintop kind of observing some enemy activity, And part of our job was to collect intelligence and radio it back every night to the command. And I kept sitting there, you know, writing the reports every night and radioing in the next morning going, okay, here's this one formation and they're bringing out this T-72. And we'd get a note back from Northern Command saying, the Syrians don't have T-72s. And, you know, my unit, we were, our nickname was the Eyes of the Nation. So the thing was, you report what you see. You don't let any influences come in. You report right. what you see. So like a week in a row, every day I'm reporting, they opened up the barn, they pulled out a T-72, and we get this report back. You're wrong. It's not a T-72. The Syrians don't have a T-72. Well, evidently, it got so high up in Northern Command that at one point, the intelligence officer of Northern Command came crawling up on his belly to our observation post because we were in a spot we really weren't supposed to be in. And so you can only get in there during the nighttime. And he comes all the way up, goes to bed because at dawn, we're going to see the barn open up and the T-72 is going to come out, right? Which couldn't be a T-72 because they didn't have them. And he gets up and I zero in the crosshairs and I show it to him and he kind of nods his head. He turns around, he goes back into his sleeping bag, sleeps all day. He gets out of there during the nighttime. And the next day there was a case of champagne delivered to our command center because that had been the first identification of a T-72 outside of the Soviet Union.
Wow.
So, oh, interesting. Yeah, that, dude, that's awesome. That I remember cool. you told me that. Yeah, that's what a story.
And the other one that kind of sticks in my head that's more along the lines of you can't make this shit up. We were on a hilltop and we were told you need to leave now because bad things are about to happen. So I'm getting all my guys together and we had a M113 was our basic team vehicle at the time. And we got a certain distance away, but then some bad things really started happening and we wound up having to leave the vehicle. And so I got all my guys out and I climb out of the hatch. You know, I was behind the 50 when this was going on. I climb out of the hatch. I run to the back of the deck of the 113, which is, I don't know, it's maybe 8 feet off the ground. The top deck, Terry, is about yeah. 8 feet. And I got my gun in my hand, I got my pack on, and I just leap off into the darkness. Just jump off the end of the 113. And I come to this crashing halt, only I'm not on the ground. And what had happened was, if you're familiar with the M113, the handle on the hatch is like this big bar that stands upright about 6 inches away from the back door. And it had gone right up in between my vest and my shirt. And so I'm dangling there. Now, of course, I've got a bruise, you know, from the base of my neck to my tailbone at that point. And it's dark. Things are going badly. Things are blowing up and all that. And I'm dangling there going like, what the hell do I do now? You know, and if, you know, if that's not a oh shit kind of moment, you're sitting there going like, I can't believe this. I'm going to die hanging off the back door of a 113. Luckily, I just, you know, let my gear loose, grabbed my gear, went running. And of course, it all happens in a split second when you're out there. And it's always funny to laugh about afterwards. But, you know, those were a couple of harrowing days before things finally calmed down. But I think, and I'm sure Terry will agree with me too, you talk about a couple of specific things that stick in your mind from your military service. I think anyone who's really been through something, all the events stick in your mind from your military service, both the good and the bad. You remember them all forever. You try to only remember the good parts about it and everything, but there's certain events that happen in your life and they're just, you know, seared into your memory. And it seems when you're in the military, a lot more of them happen all in a concentrated form.
So I think also, I was going to say too, I think also, guys, something that I knew it ever since I was kind of young in that, even as before I went in the military, even as a football player in high school and college and everything else, I think one of the most important sort of assets someone can have, especially on a small team, is a sense of humor. Because I can, I could, they could teach any dude. They taught me how to shoot, right? I'm an idiot. So like you could teach a monkey how to do most of the stuff that we do, honestly. But I mean, you know, putting it together maybe is not so easy and using it in the right circumstance. But what I'm saying is the when you have a team of guys that can, like right now I'm looking outside and it is pouring, dude. Like how many times have I been out in this kind of weather getting, I mean, like you're on an objective, you're like, maybe you got eyes on or you're doing something. It's not like we can just say, hey guys, we got to call it a day. We have to operate. This is why infantry to me was a great step up for special forces, because no matter, infantry guys are not idiots. We have to solve problems every damn day. Equipment goes down. The weather doesn't cooperate. Murphy's law always happens. So the kind of, you know, I could teach guys things, but someone who's unselfish and someone who can make you laugh when it's pissing down rain like this, or everything's bad, you're hungry, you're tired, maybe you're even close to getting killed. A dude who could put a smile on your face in the middle of all that is such an asset on any team, whether it's the military, fire department, law enforcement, basically anything. I think it's set. I always said this too, man, and I'll end it with this. I mean, I always took my job as a special forces guy very seriously, but I never take myself too seriously.
Yeah.
Because if you take yourself too seriously, you become insufferable, right? Mm. Take the job very seriously because it's life or death shit for us. I mean, we make a mistake or, you know, it's not just like, oh, we didn't get the sale or something. We may not come back, right?
Right.
And in all of our professions, that's the way it is. So take the job seriously, but don't take yourself too seriously because we're all kind of knuckleheads. And a dude who can make you laugh when things suck is gold. It's gold.
Well, and I think you guys were saying that, you know, you remember the good and the bad. I think, you know, on the emotional spectrum, the more intense the event is, whether it's intensely hilarious or intensely terrifying, it's going to be that much more indelibly burned into your memory. But the ability to look back on some of the shit that didn't kill you and laugh about it is a very, I think, unique thing to people that, you know, for a living, go into situations that might kill them. Look at crab fishermen. They laugh about, you know, stuff until something goes bad, and then they're deadly serious and they have to handle their business.
Yeah.
I think of my grandfather. He was a bombardier in the RAF in World War II, and you know the Lancaster bombers. It was the England's version of the Memphis Belle. It was a beautiful plane.
Yeah, the Lancaster. Yeah.
So there, I remember him telling me this, and I think back to him laughing. As a kid, the laughing was like, it kind of taught me my sense of humor, because he goes, yeah, we had bombed our target and we were headed back and we had to fly back through the anti-aircraft fire and it tore the hell out of the plane. And we started to lose our engines over the English Channel, and we were going down. I was just convinced we were going down. And so I started yelling, we're going down. And I told the whole crew, get the hell out of the plane. And I opened the hatch and I went for the door and I went to jump out. And he says, I feel this hand pull me back into the fuselage. And it's the radio operator. And he looks at me, goes, what are you doing? We have to bail out. And the radio operator goes, not without your fucking parachute, you don't.
Yeah, that was probably it. So someone just, and by the way, and they'll laugh about it.
Right.
You'll laugh about it, dude. You'll laugh about that.
I mean, he almost jumped out of a plane over the English Channel without a parachute. And then years later, he's telling me how funny that was.
And he'll never, and by the way, his mates will never let him live that down.
Oh, no, of course not.
No.
Never.
No.
That's another thing in our community. I suspect it's the same for cops and firefighters. If people could listen to us amongst each other, right? They would think we're the most awful people, the way we insult each other back and forth, right? I mean, we cut, because again, political correctness and all that stuff is a social construct. So if your job is literally life and death, I also say this, what do I miss the most? First of all, I miss the laughs. I miss all the cool shit we did. Don't get me wrong. It's something cool about getting on a helicopter at 2 a.m. to go do a hit with that. I mean, come on, that nothing beats that. But I also said, like, I actually had a job where when I show up to the office, every dude in there will kill for me. And everybody in there will die for me, but that's expected from me too. Yeah. I must kill for them or die for them. That cannot be replicated in any civilian job. And so that's what gets a lot of guys jammed up when we get out of the service, because it's like, I mean, what's going to equal that? I mean, what am I going to do? And no disrespect to like accountants or anything. What kind of job am I going to have where I'll be surrounded by men like that? And so you have to find a way in the world to kind of move through. And I'm lucky with Hollywood Weapons because I'm on a really fun team of people. Everybody's a problem solver. Everybody cuts on each other all the time. It's not the same as being on a Special Forces A team, but I love being on a group of people that we have. There's not that many boundaries with the stuff we say to each other, and yet everybody works and gets the job done. So I'm really lucky in that respect too.
Well, I think it comes through on the show. You and Larry, you know, you could tell you guys are having a good, as much as you guys give each other shit, you can tell you're actually having a good time. And, you know, I know Larry, like I said, Matt and I both know Larry in real life. So the smallest of smiles out of the corner of Larry's mouth is the equivalent to a belly laugh from any other human being. Larry
That's true.
Larry is about as stoic as Easter Island. So when you, but the thing about you they don't know too is that you have a wicked sense of humor. I will text Larry, and Larry will text me some of the funniest memes I've ever seen in my life.
Yes. Yes, he does.
And so you don't get to see that much of him because he is such a stoic.
It's the quiet ones you have to watch out for.
That's right. Well, I appreciate it. We won't take up any more of your gentlemen's time. Terry, thanks for being on all the way live from the East Coast. Enjoy the thunderstorm. It's hot as hell out here. And
yeah, it's going to get humid again when this stops. But yeah, thanks, guys. You guys are really cool. The last time we met, and I appreciate you helping us out with this. I think you're going to enjoy it. I know you're going to like the show. You're going to get a lot of laughs, and there's some pretty cool stuff that we do. And anytime you want to talk, we'll talk to you after it or during the middle of the season.
Yeah,
we'll
see you next time you come to L.A.
Yeah, God willing, man. All right, guys, I'll talk to you soon. Hey, Larry, I love you. I'll talk to you later.
Larry,
we'll talk to you guys later. Right,
thanks,
you
guys. Appreciate it.
Bye, guys.
Right. So that was fun. Those guys are always a good time. So last time we had him on, you know, we kind of went the darker route. We were talking about some of the more harrowing stories that they've had.
Sure.
But I thought this time, you know, the show was fun. We would have, so we could talk about some of the fun stuff they've done.
Yeah. Yeah. They get to see both sides of them with two different episodes. And obviously we'll have them on again.
Yeah. But as far as our side of things goes, we have got a couple of irons in the fire. So Matt is here. One of the reasons is because John and Matt and I sat down, and we've been working on this. I put out a post on social media because people have been asking for more. You know, we started out every other week, and then you guys wanted more. We went to every week. And the more. And so we've discussed what could we do, or if it's possible to do a midweek podcast. And some of you know, this show also kind of spawned out of a previous podcast that Matt and I did together and that John had been on a couple of times. And someday, you know, what would you think, John? We could put all those old episodes up for premium subscribers on our website if they really want to hear us talk shit.
They definitely could. I mean, they're definitely going to be like, wow. I mean, that these are the same guys? Like, that doesn't even...
Well, because we're not talking about, you know, police and military and all that kind of stuff. We're talking about relationships and women and
well, we're getting shitty.
Yeah, and we're getting shitty drunk. So that's kind of how this thing started was, well, let's not get shitty drunk and just talk about our experiences in the, you know, military or in police or firefighting. However, because Matt has experience with that and we've been asked... one of the big things people were asking about is current events.
Right.
And current events was one of the things we would do regularly on our old podcast.
Right.
But everything we did was from the modern male perspective. And everybody we had on was, you know, somebody that we would hang out with in real life, but not necessarily somebody we always agreed with. So it kind of made an interesting dynamic. So I thought we could kind of... Here's the issue I would say with doing two War Stories episodes a week is John still is working full time, and hopefully when Matt and I get back to our regularly scheduled jobs after all this lockdown stuff, we'll be working full time as well. So getting two episodes a week out of the same thing where we have, you know, meet with the veterans and get the war stories and stuff like that can be a little difficult. However, we could do, and Matt, this is what we had discussed, a podcast discussing current events and topics that are, I guess, important to men like us in this day and age. And we could discuss that. I mean, I don't know how you feel about it, Matt, but that seems like something that you and I could do, but we would, and John could do, but we'd need rotating guests, because I don't think we could have the same people on twice a week every week. So if you guys are interested in that, I think, you know, Matt's down for it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, kind of, you know, mix it up a little bit. Throw a little spice in there.
Yeah. We've had, I mean, for crying out loud, we've had a drone pilot on that show. We've had a tattoo artist on that show. We've had Army vets. We've had Marine vets. We've had firefighters. We've had, but, you know, we all kind of share a similar perspective. So I think if we're going to do some current events and some topical stuff for you guys, like as a midweek show, that's probably what we'll do. We've been toying around with the idea of just calling it the War Stories Locker Room podcast, because yeah,
it'll be like a War Stories adjacent.
Yeah, it's same people, but we won't be doing like war stories per se. If we have a story that, you know, pertains to the topic at hand, right, we might throw it in there. But if what I see from everybody responding is they'd like to hear us talk about current events and our opinions on things that are going out there. That was what that show was. So
correct. Yeah,
we might as well. That's where the phrase "ease it in like a gentleman" came from. And let me tell you, that was an interesting episode.
Yeah, those were all interesting episodes.
Yeah, we talked about a lot of different stuff. If it's not for sale, don't put it in the window. Ease it in like a gentleman. Yeah. There's a lot of wonderful.
Plenty of hate mail.
Plenty of hate mail. Yeah, we did get plenty of hate mail. Fun. We always used to, hey, come send it. Send us the hate mail. It's fine. It was really just so people could hear how friends talk when there's no political correctness and nobody there to monitor them. And just this is what we talk about. So John has been working diligently on sending out invites to the regiment on Warzone. Is that correct?
Yeah. So basically there's, been multiple people that, just real quick, as a reminder with the Activision accounts, you got to give me your name and then also the number that follows it. A lot of people are emailing or messaging us just their name.
Right.
I can't send you an invite to the actual regiment without the Activision number attached to that. So just please do that.
One of the easiest things you could do is take a photo of your ID with your phone and then message
email
it.
Or however you want to do it. And then I can get on, I punch it in and send the invite out. And then once I get back on and see that you've accepted it, I'll add you to the regiment and there you go.
Yeah. So it might take a little bit of time, cause I don't think I have permission to add people. I think you're the only one who can add
people. I got
to
give you permission, which I am withholding.
Yeah. Well, you don't want me. I'll let people in willy nilly. John's a lot more, John's like the doorman. I'm like the guy who brought the beer. John's like, okay, you can come in, but
you're the Oprah. You get a pass. You get a pass.
No, and John's over there pulling passes from people.
It's really cool. Just the other day we were, I was actually on with some of my work buddies and then, added a guy that listens to us and, you know, he just started talking about the podcast and it's just cool to hear, like, you're talking to some dude in some other state that listens to us, but now we're playing video games and just talking about just random stuff, not necessarily the podcast or games.
Yeah. And we want you guys to connect with each other as listeners and your feedback is important to us. So, so finding you on there is cool. So here's the easiest way to do it is on social media, take a picture with your phone and then attach it to a message, a DM on whatever, you know, Instagram or Facebook or whatever you want to do it. If you get me, I will forward it to John, make sure he gets it. Or if you get John, he'll just do it. If you want to email it, that's fine. Email booking.warstories@gmail.com. That's John's email address that he uses to book guests. You can do that if you just want to come on the show or suggest a guest to us, or put in the subject line Warzone and then include your full gamer Activision, not your Xbox gamer tab or your PlayStation Activision gamer account. Tab, but your Activision account gamer tag with the numbers after it. Mm-hmm. And we'll get you in the regiment. So we've been getting people in there. If you sent us a request and we, God forbid we missed it, send it again. If you sent it in and we responded, wait maybe a day or two because sometimes John's going to get time to wake up.
Yeah, sometimes I'm not on there for like 4 days because of work.
Yeah.
So just give me some time.
So, until then, John, do you have anything?
Nope.
Matt, you want to stick around?
Yeah, I'll stick around.
Okay, cool. Until our next episode, come home with your shield or on it.